Thursday, November 5th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. presidential election. No one knew if it would be a landslide or a nail biter. That's one of the few questions we can answer.
This does go to, you know, multiple recounts in court cases. We could be in for a very long haul.
Foreign and domestic disinformation campaigns are continuing to play a role creating uncertainty and distrust among voters.
The goal of these campaigns is to cause people to doubt the outcome of the election, lose confidence in the process of voting and in the process of reporting the vote.
Also ahead, leaders in Europe expressed concerns over the uncertainty in the U.S. presidential election. It's all on today's International Edition. Americans are still waiting for the final vote tally in battleground states that will determine who will be the president for the next 4 years. Millions turned out to vote on Tuesday in a mostly calm show of civic duty amid the coronavirus pandemic and deep divisions around one of the most polarizing presidential races in U.S. history. Donald Trump's preemptive declaration of victory was condemned by some U.S. political commentators and civil rights groups who warned about the trampling of longstanding Democratic norms. AP correspondent Ed Donahue reports the Trump campaign is filing a number of lawsuits trying to stop states from more counting.
Joe Biden's victory in Wisconsin got him closer.
It's clear that we're winning enough states to reach 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency.
Biden says he realizes not all the votes have been counted.
I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
The Trump campaign wants a recount in Wisconsin and is suing to stop the counting in Michigan and Pennsylvania. Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani says the problem is observer access.
The observers can be 20 or 30 feet away, never able to see the ballot itself.
Giuliani says he might file a national lawsuit to expose what he calls the corruption of the Democratic Party. I'm Ed Donahue.
The largest remaining electoral prize is the state of Pennsylvania with its 20 electoral votes. VOA correspondent Esha Sarai is on the ground in the Pennsylvania state capital of Philadelphia, where she's been monitoring the vote count and hearing from voters and protesters. My colleague Jason Patinkin spoke to her earlier about what she's seeing and hearing.
Pennsylvania carries 20 electoral votes, which is a pretty hefty lift for one state. And because of all of the absentee and mail-in ballots that are still being counted, Pennsylvania might actually be one of the last states to declare its results in the presidential election. But Pennsylvania also is kind of a key swing state. You know, it doesn't really have that history. In fact, when it voted for Donald Trump in 2016, it was the first time since the 80s that the state went red. But this year, especially given what happened in 2016, people are really preparing for a toss-up here. So it's a closely watched race, and election officials in the state said that they think they will have votes tallied by Thursday.
Now, you're in Philadelphia, which is more of a Democrat-leaning city. What are voters there telling you about this vote counting process?
So I went downtown in Philadelphia today, and Biden supporters have been very clear in telling me that they are extremely anxious. They are really just feeling nervous seeing these results come in and not knowing which way the scales are going to tip. In fact, one young woman told me today that this whole process feels like she's having an anxiety attack. But at the same time, another woman that I met at a rally today, a Count Every Vote rally, said that though the anticipation is very difficult, she says that she feels really committed to the fact that Pennsylvania needs to count all the ballots that were cast on and before Tuesday.
And on the other hand, President Trump and many of his supporters have a different view on counting all of the ballots. Can you explain?
Yes, the Trump administration for the past few months has really been seeding some distrust in the mail-in ballot process. So there was a case recently in the Supreme Court in which the Supreme Court did say that mail-in ballots received in Pennsylvania that are postmarked by Election Day, November 3rd, and are received within 3 days should and will be counted. According to the Associated Press, the Trump administration has signaled that he is going to challenge this ruling. And I'd like to add that according to the Associated Press, there have been no reports of fraud on any type of ballot concerns out of Pennsylvania yet.
Now, there's also another major story taking place in Philadelphia, and that's the release Wednesday night of police body cam footage from the police killing of black man Walter Wallace Jr. in West Philadelphia last week. Police shot him after ordering him to drop a knife, and then that killing sparked significant protests in Philadelphia and elsewhere. What's the latest?
Yes, so the Philadelphia police have been signaling for a few days now that they were planning on releasing body cam footage from this shooting Wednesday evening. Activists that I spoke with in West Philly on Election Day said that they felt like this was done specifically so that this news and this body cam footage would get lost in election coverage. Now, what's happening downtown today is interesting because there are rallies, as we discussed, to count every vote, but there also was a march organized in anticipation of this body cam footage being released. Both of them have joined forces now. The Philadelphia Inquirer is reporting that about 1,000 people are marching downtown on Market Street, both to ensure that all votes, all mail-in votes and absentee votes, are counted in this election, but also to demand justice for Walter Wallace Jr.
You know, that really is quite interesting because besides the COVID-19 outbreak, this year in the U.S. really has been dominated by, on the one hand, the election, and on the other hand, the Black Lives Matter protests for racial justice. So that's really something to see them merge like this.
Yeah, I mean, again, given what I discussed with voters, especially in West Philadelphia on Election Day, I think that these things are intertwined. Part of the Black Lives Matter movement has been a broad range of equality, and there's been a lot of discussion about voter suppression, disenfranchisement, and some reports that waiting times at polling places are longer in predominantly Black neighborhoods than they are in white neighborhoods. So it does make sense that at this point in the country's history, these two forces are kind of joined together.
Well, it sounds like a busy time for you there in Pennsylvania, Esha. Thank you for taking the time to explain things to our listeners.
Thank you.
VOA correspondent Esha Sarai in Philadelphia speaking with my colleague Jason Patinkin. A day after the polls closed on Election Day in the U.S., the outcome of many state and national races, including the presidential, remained undecided. That is partially due to the historically large number of mail-in ballots that had to be tallied. To get a sense of what the moment means for party activists, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with a Democratic and a Republican Party official from two very different states.
David Arredondo is chairman of the Republican Party in Lorain County, Ohio, in the American Midwest. He is pleased President Donald Trump carried his state, but is disheartened to have to wait for the final results in some swing states that could decide the election's ultimate outcome.
I think it was very unconscionable on some states to close down the vote count last night and wait until today to resume. That doesn't bode well. I didn't hear very many complaints about things that were out of the normal. In Ohio, we're going to wait for some more absentee or provisional ballots. But pretty much we have our election already determined.
VOA asked Mr. Arredondo about the reaction he saw when word came that President Trump had won in Ohio.
Certainly there were some celebrations, but those were muted because of the pandemic. People were very cautious in their celebrations. Haven't seen or heard word of any kind of protests.
Morris Sullivan is co-chair of Veterans for Biden, New Hampshire. She is proud of how smoothly the voting went in her small northeastern state and is pleased that Trump's Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden, prevailed there. Now it's just a matter of waiting for the final national tally.
I think a lot of folks are really still very focused and watching closely the states in the Midwest, specifically Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So, you know, a lot of, you know, folks are kind of waiting on that. But I think, you know, very proud of how New Hampshire performed and delivered our four electoral votes for Joe Biden.
Of course, the election was not only about choosing the next president. Many congressional seats were also on the ballot. Ms. Sullivan notes that New Hampshireites re-elected Democrats Amy Custer and Chris Pappas to the U.S. House of Representatives.
She's the first Democrat in New Hampshire's second congressional district to win a fifth term. Over here in the first congressional district where I live, Congressman Pappas' victory is the first time that Democrats have won the first congressional district, which is often called the swingiest swing district in the country. The first time that we've won it three times in a row since the late 1970s.
voters around the country were also electing state and local officials. David Arredondo, the Lorain County Republican official, says the status quo has mostly been preserved in Ohio.
There is a very strong majority in the Senate by the Republicans, also in the state representative House. Maybe the big difference was that we lost a Supreme Court justice. So Democrats have three justices and we have four. However, what is very telling is our local election here in Lorain County. We have a three-member county commission that runs county government. And yesterday we won two out of the three seats for the commission, which means now Republicans run the commission. And that hasn't been done since 80 years ago.
Maurice Sullivan notes that Republicans have gained a few seats on New Hampshire's executive council.
But again, we've got to make sure that, you know, every vote is counted, and then we'll have a much clearer picture as to sort of what the landscape looks like here after that.
Vote counting could continue in several states for the next few days before the country has all the results in this year's unusual election season. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
U.S. security and intelligence officials claimed a partial victory in the country's nationwide elections when it comes to interference, but there are lingering concerns. Joining us to hear more is VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden.
Election security, and specifically the security of the election infrastructure, the system that enables Americans to cast their ballots and then for elections officials to count those ballots and determine winners, has been top of mind since 2016, when intelligence officials say Russian actors were able to penetrate election systems in all 50 states. And between from late Tuesday night to late Wednesday night, the day after the polls closed and the votes were all in and are being counted, election officials say so far, so good. The head of the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency said late Wednesday, there's no evidence foreign adversaries were able to prevent Americans from casting their ballots or that foreign adversaries were able to penetrate election systems and change individual votes, which is something that was a top concern. Previously, the head of U.S. Cyber Command said that they were confident foreign adversaries were not meddling and talked about how they had taken preemptive action. And when they saw things out there in cyberspace by foreign adversaries, they took action to shut it down and to deter any aggression. So what we're hearing from federal officials right now is that they promised what they said would be the safest, most secure election in modern history, and at least on the physical infrastructure side, on the votes, on the counting of the ballots. They're confident right now that they've delivered.
I understand they're turning their attention to another threat, which is disinformation from foreign actors.
Exactly. And one of the confusing things about securing the election is that it's always been this twofold threat. First, what systems might be vulnerable, and is there a possibility that votes could change? And again, election security officials are saying they're confident that did not happen, that all the votes were secure, and any American who cast a ballot will have that ballot counted. The other threat, though, is something that is much more difficult to measure, and that's influence operations. And as far back as August, counterintelligence officials were warning that there were three major actors that were trying to influence and change the way Americans think heading into the election. Those three actors were China, Russia, and Iran. Most recently, they've talked more about Russia and Iran, and they're saying they've seen some of that. They've seen some of it with state-backed media from Russia. Just a couple of weeks ago, before the election, they saw Iran try to steal and manage to steal, actually, some information from voter registration databases in one state and use that information in a disinformation campaign to try to intimidate specifically Democratic voters who were likely to vote for Joe Biden. And they say they shut that down pretty quickly and that the physical hack didn't have an impact and that voters were assured that they were in no danger and they should go and vote however they wanted. But now that the vote is over and that they're counting the ballots and it's become this drawn-out process, which was expected given the heavy number of mail-in ballots and early voting because of the coronavirus pandemic, they're saying threat surface, the attack surface has changed. And so they're expecting, as this process draws on, for foreign countries like Russia, like Iran, like China, like even Cuba and Venezuela, they said there are almost 30 countries that have been seeking to meddle and try to influence what happens in the Mayo's election, that they'll start rolling out new disinformation campaigns, and that the goal of these campaigns is to cause people to doubt the outcome of the election, to lose confidence in the process of voting and in the process of reporting the vote, to just cause chaos, confusion, and distrust in the democratic process. And they're saying they're beginning to see some signs of it. They pointed to some of the posts, some of the stories being put out by Russian state-backed media, but they're expecting as the process goes on, and they expect this will happen all the way up to the presidential inauguration, there will be more and more that they'll have to contend with. And already they're trying to push back. They're trying to push Americans to what they call trusted sources, local election officials, but it is going to be, in some ways, an uphill battle race.
And it sounds like they're also concerned about domestic disinformation.
The disinformation environment in the United States, in some ways, it's a little bit more difficult for the intelligence officials, especially those focused on foreign adversaries, to track down. But they're worried about it because it's something that the foreign adversaries will mimic. They'll jump on, they'll spread, they'll exacerbate. And already, CISA, late on Wednesday, was warning of one incident in which there were some fake Twitter accounts that were pretending to be the Associated Press, which, as a media organization, plays a big role in determining and calling states in the election, who won which state. And they put out a series of fake accounts, and they're not sure who did this yet, but fake accounts saying that a certain state had gone for a certain candidate. And so they're saying, Americans, beware, go only to trusted sources and watch out, because this will happen more and more. If you see something that doesn't look right, they say, investigate it, don't share it.
VOA national security correspondent Jeff Seldon, thanks so much. As the world watches in anticipation of the U.S. presidential election outcome, Germany's defense minister says arguments over U.S. presidential election legitimacy seems to be looming. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says we have to have a little patience, almost certainly a lot of patience, Borrell told Spanish national television. In the American system, the last vote counts, and maybe the last vote changes the result. But as world leaders generally refrained from commenting on the outcome until it's clear, the particularly fractious and contested nature of this vote is already sparking concerns overseas. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Besides the presidential election, Democrats were hoping they could whittle away the Republican Senate majority, but that does not appear to have been successful. Joining us for more is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, Democrats were really counting on having the power of a Senate majority to help get their agenda through.
So at the moment, Democrats are waiting on just a handful of key races across the country that are still too close to call. But even if those close races do come in their favor, they did not receive the sweeping mandate that they were hoping to secure by flipping a lot of red states blue, turning those Senate seats so that they could get the majority in the U.S. Senate and possibly deliver a real boon to Vice President Joe Biden if he's elected president, so that he can work within his own party to enact some big legislative agenda items. That looks like that's not going to happen, even if Vice President Joe Biden does secure enough Electoral College votes. And of course, they're also looking at some disappointing losses in the U.S. House of Representatives. So not a great week for the Democrats in terms of making the case to the American people that U.S. President Donald Trump is not the right choice for the country.
And Catherine, there still are some unknowns as far as the makeup of the U.S. Senate. What can you tell us regarding that?
Right. So one of those key races that we're still waiting to hear back about is the Georgia 2nd Senate seat, which is going to advance to a runoff on January 5th, 2021, because none of the three major candidates in that race were able to secure the 50% of the vote to avoid that runoff. So we're going to get the incumbent Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler going up against a Democrat who is new to politics, Reverend Raphael Warnock. They are going to face off against each other in January. And as we know, the control of the U.S. Senate may come down to just one or two seats. So if we are waiting to hear what Georgia is going to do, that may be the deciding result in January.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, thanks so much. With the millions of votes cast early, a definitive winner not announced on election night, and a pandemic still encompassing the globe, what will be the longer-lasting impact on the American voting experience? International Edition's Steve Miller gets insights on that from Augusta University political science professor Craig Albert.
Well, I think we can confidently say that mail-in ballots are here to stay. So this is, we've always had absentee ballots for citizens overseas, for those that could not leave their house for some reason medically in several states. But now this is going to be open, it appears, to the general population. So this is going to be the general consequence of the 2020 election will be mail-in. Mail-in voting will be a way that all Americans will be able to vote for at least presidential elections from here on out. I envision in the next 2 years that state laws will redefine and re-legislate how that works and become more regulated so that there's no even hint of a controversy of when votes can be counted if they were received after the day of election, for instance. So I bet that that is going to be what the states focus on, is regulating those laws. With mail-in balloting becoming more and more important and more prevalent for 2024 and 2028, how candidate campaign in states will dramatically be redefined. So their strategy will change, and it won't focus on just one state here or there or one county in each of the states. They're going to have to reach a more generalized audience, and so they're going to have to appeal to the people that usually are left without a presidential visit, because now they're just not focused on those key voting spots. They have to focus on the whole state, because voter turnout is going to be probably 60, 65, if not 70% for the foreseeable future, with absentee ballots being allowed as a general part of everyday life.
One last question. As a political scientist who watches the American political mechanism, what's been the most interesting thing for you to watch during this last cycle?
That the Democrats focused on, you know, Trump's personality and Trump's character, and a lot of their campaigning was focused on, we are not President Trump, elect somebody that's more professional, more presidential, as the establishment would like that to be. And that doesn't seem to have convinced a lot of the right-leaning voters. They don't really seem to care about the arguments about President Trump's character or personality. So what it tells me is that there needs to be a return to focus on policy, and that if you want to win people over from the other side, you need to focus on your policy and why your policy is better for the average American voter. Because it doesn't seem, for the most part, that a lot of people flipped because of the argument of not liking Trump's personality. And I also think that this is going to play true for the millennials and the Generation Zers that are coming of age to vote more and more and will be the largest voting bloc in 2024 and 2028. They're going to want to focus on policy. They're going to be social media savvy, information savvy, and you're going to need clear policy to sway them one way or the other. So I think that'll have a significant consequence on how campaigning happens for 2024 and 2028.
Augusta University political science professor Craig Albert speaking with International Edition's Steve Miller. You're listening to International Edition, back in a minute. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Regardless of the presidential election outcome in the U.S., a vexing issue remains to be decided. Will the U.S. be able to tame a perilous pandemic that's surging as holidays, winter, and other challenges approach? Public health experts fear the answer is no, at least in the short term, with potentially dire consequences. Joining us to talk about the concerns is Dr. Arthur Kaplan, professor of bioethics at New York Langone Medical Center. So if cases continue to escalate, what does that mean for the country in the coming months?
That means also a burdened healthcare system. We're starting to see it in some parts of the United States where hospital beds are getting full, cases are rising, and it looks like they don't have enough medical care to get to everybody who's sick. And obviously that would be a disaster if that spread across North America continued to be a challenge in Europe as well. Can't have a broken healthcare system. It puts all kinds of people at risk, not just COVID, but also people who are, need cancer treatment or trauma treatment or whatever.
What do you say to some who argue that the reason we are seeing these escalating numbers is because we're doing so much more testing?
Well, it's ridiculous. You don't get more cases because you are doing more testing. You may, true, detect more cases, but if there are rises out there in hospitalizations, that's not a function of testing. That's a function of who's sick. And so the more people are actually going to the hospital showing symptoms, that's not testing them. We know that that's real cases, real numbers. I saw a number also that said we're doing in the U.S. about 5% more testing than we did a couple of months ago. But in many parts of the country, we have 25 to 40% increases in positive tests. So that gap isn't explained by saying, well, things aren't getting worse, we're just testing more. I think we actually should test even more. The best route to control the spread is to get people who are infectious and isolate them. The more you can do that, the more the rest of us get a little bit more liberty to move around.
So realistically, with all that we're seeing, and so far all that we know, including all of these promising vaccines in the works, what do you think it's safe to say the earliest that not just here in the U.S., but really the world, since obviously it's a global pandemic and it crosses borders, what do you think is a realistic time frame before some sort of normalcy will be back?
I'm going to say summer next year. I think we will see some vaccines around that will work and that will help really knock down the death rate from the disease, harm caused by the disease. Hopefully we'll get some vaccines too that help make us less infectious to others. I still think we're going to see some need for social distancing and control over gatherings and things like that. Masks will probably be around still, but I think we could see reopening the economy, reopening the schools, reopening sports by next summer.
New York Langone Medical Center Professor of Bioethics Arthur Kaplan, thank you so much for being with us. The United States fleetly exited the Paris Agreement on Wednesday, fulfilling an old promise by President Donald Trump to withdraw the world's second largest greenhouse gas emitter from the global pact to fight climate change. But the outcome of the tight U.S. election contest will ultimately determine for how long. Trump's Democratic rival Joe Biden has promised to rejoin the agreement if elected. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good day.